Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, a tax bill through the House. Roy Moore, Al Franken in the sexual harassment hot seat. Jeff Sessions under oath again. Republicans got their tax bill through the House. Speaker Paul Ryan feeling fine.
This conference today did one of the greatest things we could possibly do to make good on that promise, and I'm so proud.
Sexual harassment allegations yesterday against Minnesota Senator Al Franken, all week against Alabama's Roy Moore. Here from Beverly Young Nelson.
I was terrified. He was also trying to pull my shirt off. I thought that he was going to rape me. I was twisting, and I was struggling, and I was begging him to stop.
And Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified he's been forthright in the Russia investigation.
I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Margaret Brennan, Aaron Blake, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your take on Roy Moore, Al Franken, the House tax bill, the president's Asia trip? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Margaret Brennan, White House and senior foreign affairs correspondent for CBS News. Just back from that five-nation Asia trip. Margaret, terrific to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Still jet-lagged, but
yeah,
glad to be here.
No
with
doubt.
You.
And from Washington, Aaron Blake joins us, senior political reporter for The Washington Post. It's been a hot week on that front. Aaron, welcome back to On Point.
Really good to be with you, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Margaret, and Aaron.
And I guess we, once again, we're going right to these sexual harassment, sexual abuse charges. This we heard a little bit of Beverly Young Nelson, but here she was. This is the fifth, now substantially more than that, to come out against Roy Moore, saying during a press conference on Monday that this is way back when she was a waitress in a restaurant there. He'd taken her to a car behind the restaurant, offered her a ride home. Then things got ugly. She said in the car he locked the door, wouldn't let her out. And she was 16 at the time.
He said, "You're just a child." And he said, "I am the district attorney of Etowah County. And if you tell anyone about this, no one will ever believe you."
Roy Moore, deny, deny, deny has been his strategy. Here he was over the weekend.
"I have not been guilty of sexual misconduct with anyone. I've been investigated more than any other person in this country. To think that grown women would wait 40 years to come before, right before an election, to bring charges is absolutely unbelievable."
The Alabama Republican Party sticking with him. The Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, no buddy of Roy Moore, not sticking with him. Here was Mitch McConnell.
"Roy Moore should step aside. The women who've come forward are entirely credible. He's obviously not fit to be in the United States Senate. And we've looked at all the options to try to prevent that from happening."
And then, just yesterday, allegations against Al Franken. You got Leanne Tweeden. She's a radio anchor now in Los Angeles for KABC. But she said on a USO tour back in 2006, they'd been touring, and he went after her. Here was Tweeden.
"He stuck his tongue down my mouth, and I remember I pushed him off with my hands. And I just remember I almost punched him, so, because every time I see him now, like, my hands clench into fists, and I'm sure that's probably why. And I said, if you ever do that to me again, I'm not going to be so nice about it the second time."
Aaron Blake, I don't know where to begin here. It just seems to go on and on. But what about this week? First of all, is there anything, we'll look at Al Franken, is there anything standing in the way of Roy Moore staying on the ballot through the vote in Alabama in this special election coming up in early December?
Well, there doesn't seem to be anything in his way anymore, especially after that vote by the Alabama Republican Party. That was the best hope that Republicans had for getting him out of this race. The statement that the party made was strong and pretty unified. Roy Moore does not seem as though he's the kind of guy who would drop out of his own volition. He's of course, been kicked off the state Supreme Court twice for taking what he believed to be very principled stands. And so Republicans in D.C. needed to prevail upon the state party to withdraw his nomination, and that is now not going to happen. So any thoughts of a write-in campaign with Moore being withdrawn, I think, have probably gone by the wayside here, and Republicans are talking more and more about what happens if and when he does win that seat, which, by the way, is a major question right now.
What do the polls look like? Is it possible to tell? We see what the Republican Party's doing in Alabama. What about voters there? Do we have a sense of where they're headed? Doug Jones is challenging for this seat that Jeff Sessions stepped out of. There's been even talk of, you know, Jeff Sessions being put back into that seat after what you tell us. But what do the polls look like out of Alabama?
Well, special election polling is always very difficult to read because the turnout numbers are going to be different than a regular election. It tends to be all over the place, and that's certainly been the case in this race. There was a Fox News poll that came out on Thursday evening that showed Doug Jones, the Democrat, winning by 8 points. There is some skepticism about that poll, I would add, though, because it showed that in the state, the voters there in the poll approved of Barack Obama more than they approve of President Trump, which is a reason for skepticism in a state like Alabama. So we don't know, but I think it is a consensus right now that the race is very close, that Democrats have a chance in a race that they, by all accounts, shouldn't have a chance in, and that Roy Moore is not a cinch to win this race.
Just a stunning parade of women this week. And yes, these are allegations from a long time ago, but we're up to big numbers now, and many other people corroborating, talking about how he was a persona non grata at the local mall in Alabama. Can you imagine what kind of behavior you have to be on to be banned from the local mall, Margaret Brennan? And then here comes the Al Franken thing. Now, this was before he was in office. Nevertheless, it was very prominent. Woman coming forward and saying this was not cool, and Al Franken apologizing not once but twice yesterday. And you're covering the White House, Margaret. The president jumping in on this one. President Trump jumping on the Franken story.
Yeah, calling him Al Frankenstein. And the president last night really lit in on Twitter to Senator Franken doing something that he had not done with these allegations against Roy Moore. He had repeatedly been asked while we were in Asia about Roy Moore and these allegations from so many women, and the president said he didn't know enough to comment. Well, clearly that's not the case when it comes to this Democrat, Al Franken, who he really ravaged on Twitter, saying, you know, God knows what happened next, and implying things about his past as well. So the president there apparently really paying no heed to the fact that the world heard him on tape talking about grabbing a woman by her genitals, and saw that that didn't impact his campaign in a negative way. He went on to win it. So that seems to be, you know, he feels that he can comment on this and do so with confidence because he has his White House press secretary saying from the podium that anyone who's ever alleged that he himself had any kind of sexual assault or misconduct, any of those people making those accusations, was a liar. I mean, that is the White House policy. So perhaps not surprising to see him weigh in on this. But I mean, frankly, all of this is so difficult to cover because we're really talking about a spectrum of disgusting behavior ranging from pedophilia, rape, assault, to harassment, and somehow this is all getting wrapped up politically right now, and that is really muddying what seem to be very credible and very important and very painful things that these victims have come forward with. So there are so many different aspects to the story, and so many people are taking sort of their own angle to it in a way that frankly, it must be very difficult for some of the victims to be hearing.
The president almost mum on Roy Moore, but on Twitter, willing to get very graphic on the Al Franken front. There was that photograph that went up of Franken sort of appearing. This Leanne was sleeping, and Leanne Tweeden, and he's sort of, I don't know if he's just clowning or what, but he's got his hands over her breast as she's asleep on an airplane, or above her breasts, or her chest anyway. The president tweeting, where do his hands go in pictures 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 while she sleeps? Jack Beatty, we've got a spectrum here of allegations, and we have a spectrum of responses, and it's spilling over from this to look all the way back in history, back to Bill Clinton. his case put on the table this week, all these years later, and people looking at the White House right now and saying, "With okay, if we're going to have investigations here and there, if we're talking about taking people out of races, what about the sitting president now and then, Jack?"
Indeed. You know, there's a breakthrough going on here. And I think in the 60s, Robin Morgan, who was one of the founders of Ms. Magazine, in a book called Sisterhood is Powerful, coined the phrase, "The personal is the political." And that became the sort of mantra of feminism at the time. And here we see it happening right in front of us. These are personal things that women have suffered, these indignities, these assaults on their autonomy, these efforts to staunch their ambition. But they're also political because powerful people have got away with them. And now this has become the subject of politics. And I think it's going to be it is going to make such a difference certainly in the narrow frame of politics as we see more and more of these things come out. According to CNN, who spoke to 50 lawmakers and staffers on Capitol Hill, practically everybody they talked to either knew someone who'd been sexually harassed or knew or had experienced it. Him or herself, and people on Capitol Hill keep what's called a creep list. We're going to hear more about that. Those creeps are going to be exposed, and this is now going to be the subject of politics in the most direct way. How do you treat women? And it isn't just a matter of, well, you know, it's insulting someone's dignity is bad enough. It's worse than that. It's more insidious. As a woman who lost a job at the New York Times, when Michael Oreskes' slate of NPR News was there, she said her encounter with him, quote, "killed my ambition." What a terrible thing to do.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, sexual harassment revelations roiling both parties now. The House votes on a tax plan. Trump defends Putin. Sessions testifies. Zimbabwe's palace coup. We'll look at that. The U.S. touts coal at a climate change conference and a lot more. Aaron Blake is with us, political reporter, senior political reporter for The Washington Post. Margaret Brennan, just back from the president's trip to Asia, White House and senior foreign affairs correspondent for CBS News. Jack Beatty is here. You can join us. What should happen with Roy Moore? With Al Franken, what kind of tax bill is coming through here? Is it really for the middle class? Is it a Trojan horse for the rich? Will it kill Obamacare? Lots of callers on the harassment front first. Frank in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Frank, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
A couple of comments. I think whatever we do, we have to realize that this is not just a sexual issue. It's a sex issue, as it's been stated, of power. And it permeates not just the political world, but society as a whole. And it's been going on for a long time, probably since human beings have existed.
What should happen here, Frank? What should happen?
I think that Senator Al Franken should resign. If the senator, prospective senator from Alabama, does win, he should be removed, and the president of the United States should resign.
The president of the United States. Why Donald Trump?
Because he has had similar accusations, and the veracity of them, I do not question. Evidently, the voters of the United States of America question them, which I say says something about where we are as a society today. Women will continue to bring forth allegations which are hard to substantiate, but the overwhelming number of them bring some veracity to this, I believe.
Frank, we've got it. All three should go. You're talking Roy Moore, Al Franken, and President Trump. Let us hold that thought. Mary in Safety Harbor, Florida. Mary, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I spent much of my life being a child abuse investigator and then an advocate for sexual assault victims. And couple points I'd like to make. First of all, it is different to sexually harass an adult than it is to sexually assault a child. We're talking about degrees, and to lump everybody in the same category is, in my opinion, wrong and will devaluate the argument.
So are you're thinking about more the Moore case or cases and contrasting them with the Al Franken case here, Mary?
Of course. What Al Franken did was wrong, and it's a symptom of our society. It has gone on forever, and it needs to change. And I think we've reached a tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell talked about, where we are actually, women are feeling empowered to speak up. The reason women didn't speak up before is because nobody listened. So now women are feeling empowered to speak up, and that needs to change. But I think we need to be careful not to reduce everything to the same thing. There are degrees here. What Al Franken did was sexual harassment. It was inappropriate. He apologized. He said he was wrong. What Moore did was sexual assault. It was pedophilia. It was on children, not on an adult. He did not apologize. He did not take responsibility.
Mary, we've got it. I mean, he was a 30-something-year-old DA. He took a 14-year-old girl home from a custody hearing in the court and stripped her to her underwear and all the rest. Margaret Brennan, are distinctions being made here? Or right now, is this just a steamroller? If the word sexual harassment come up, it's all the same.
Right. Well, that's why I was making the earlier point about this being a spectrum of behavior here. And I think your caller is right and making a very important point here, that very serious allegations are getting muddied by the political mudslinging here and need to be looked at and considered on the merits and the specifics of exactly what is being alleged here, and shouldn't all be written off with this broad brush. It is right to say that this is not something specific to politics, too. And so trying to whittle it down to just, these are Democrats trying to take out Republicans, and Republicans now got one on Democrats with Al Franken here, misses really the broader point if there is to be a lesson learned from this or some sort of social change to come. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a woman in your life who hasn't had some sort of harassment experience that is different than pedophilia and assaulting a child. And so I think that's where the broader nation has been sort of just caught up and fascinated by what's happening in a race in Alabama here and wouldn't otherwise be paying such attention, but really questioning how is it that these kind of allegations would not take someone out of eligibility here, and how could the White House not weigh in on this? What we've heard from the White House is if the allegations are true, Roy Moore should step aside, but at this point, we don't really want to go further. That was a different message than what we heard from Ivanka Trump, the president's advisor and daughter, who said she had no reason to doubt the accusers and that there's a special place in hell for those who abuse children.
I mean, this whole thing sort of moving in time and space, I'm sure you heard this as well, but we had New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand yesterday telling the New York Times that President Clinton, Bill Clinton, should have resigned after his relationship with White House intern Monica Lewinsky became public 2 decades ago. She had words on President Trump as well.
Is it your view that the President Clinton should have stepped down at that time, given the allegations?
I think that is the appropriate response. But I think things have changed today, and I think under those circumstances, there should be a very different reaction. And I think in light of this conversation, we should have a very different conversation about President Trump and a very different conversation about allegations against him.
Aaron Blake, we've got to get to the tax bill. But on this front, if Roy Moore, if he wins in Alabama, we don't know. Do you think, Mitch McConnell, who is nobody of his, is the majority leader. Would they seat him? Will they vote to kick him out? Might they, in fact, bring Jeff Sessions over? What might unfold here?
It's really difficult to see right now. After the most graphic accuser, Beverly Nelson, came out on Monday and said what she did about what happened with her and Roy Moore when she was 16.
Yeah,
the car, and what she said was sexual assault and almost rape. The chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee came out and said that Roy Moore should be expelled if he is seated in the Senate. I think it's a little bit more difficult than that. The question is there going to be an ethics process involved? That can take a very, very long time, as we found out with Bob Packwood back in the early 90s. That took 3 years before he was forced to resign. Are they going to expel him without having that process, even though the voters of Alabama will have duly elected him? I think that sets a very difficult precedent for senators to vote for. And so I think it was held out there as a threat, but I don't think actually making that happen is going to be a very easy thing to do.
And what about Senator Franken, Aaron? I mean, he said he's apologized. He said, let's take this to the Ethics Committee. What might happen on that front?
Well, I think for now we're waiting to see more. The senator has apologized. He has said that what he did was wrong. But his statements also suggest that he disagrees with Leanne Tweeden about exactly what transpired, especially when as regards to the rehearsal of a kiss for a skit that they were going to do for the troops. He says that he doesn't remember that, as Leanne Tweeden does. We don't know exactly what he quibbles with, but Leanne Tweeden described this kiss as predatory, as basically him forcing himself upon her in a way that caused her to lash out at him. We don't know exactly what he sees differently about that event, but it would be great to know. And I think until we know exactly what his version of events is, it's hard to say exactly where this is going to lead.
This is neither or all of this by no means over, but we have much more to look at, and I think we just have to turn to it. A big tax bill through the House, first big legislative victory. Not ultimate victory yet here. The Senate remains, and that has its own challenges. But through the House yesterday, here was the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, saying this will really help average Americans.
This is about giving hardworking taxpayers bigger paychecks, more take-home pay. This is about giving those families who are struggling peace of mind. It's about getting this economy to grow faster so we get bigger wages, more jobs, and we put America in the driver's seat in the global economy once again.
Okay, there we are. Aaron, first to you on this. Is that a fair characterization of this? I've seen many, many assessments of this that say the major benefit goes to the quite wealthy, and the corporate tax rates in the Senate version of this are permanent, but the individual tax break is temporary. Is this a middle-class tax break? And what about what was achieved yesterday?
Well, it's certainly a bigger tax break for corporations, for wealthy Americans, for small businesses than it is for middle class Americans, because the wealthy and the corporations tend to pay a larger share of taxes. And so if you're cutting taxes big time, it's generally coming from those places. I think the Senate bill is a significantly more difficult prospect. They, in order to get the kind of revenue that they needed from this bill, had to include a repeal of the individual mandate of the Affordable Care Act. That is going to, according to the nonpartisan tax analysts who review these things, it's going to actually create an increase in taxes, the tax burden for households making less than $75,000 over the next decade. So this is running into all kinds of procedural hurdles. It's a big question whether it'll pass out of the Senate, where Ron Johnson has already said, the senator from Wisconsin has already said he won't vote for it. So they really only have another vote to spare there. And from there, they have to bring it to a conference committee. There are major differences between the House and Senate bill. And getting a combined effort that both sides will have to vote for again is going to be extremely difficult. So I think we're in much the situation with this as we were in a lot of ways on the health care bill, which passed in the House and wound up falling short in the Senate.
You had Democrats, of course, complaining right away, saying that the middle class benefits will go away. Here was Oregon Democratic Senator Ron Wyden.
A decade out, this bill raises taxes by $27 billion on families earning $75,000 and under. And meanwhile, the big corporations are guaranteed a cut across the board.
And Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins, who, of course, was right in the thick of the whole repeal and replace effort over the summer, yesterday was on MSNBC with Chuck Todd, talking about the Senate tax legislation and concerned about dismantling Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, by doing away, it would, with the individual mandate.
Healthcare is such a complex issue, and to pull one section out of the Affordable Care Act without any kind of replacement, such as an auto enrollment that I and Bill Cassidy had suggested earlier this year, and put it into a very complex tax bill does not make sense.
Jack Beatty, can you see these senators stopping, these Republican senators stopping this time? All it takes is a couple. It happened over the summer, but the sense of sort of desperate yearning for a legislative win is so monumental right now in the GOP, Jack. Can you see them standing up to this?
There's going to be a tremendous amount of cross pressure. And one source is going to be, I think, the conscience of people. And you hear it in Susan Collins, and also simply the looking at the facts of this regressive tax scheme. But on the other side, you've got, what Chris Collins, the New York Republican, said, my donors are basically saying, get this done or don't ever call me again. Well, there it is, isn't it? The donors are going to be saying, we want a tax cut. And, you know, when you look at those donors, people like the Sheldon Adelson, the Mercers, and so on, the Kochs, they give a lot of money to politicians in the scores of millions. But just by eliminating the estate tax, they stand to gain billions. It's the best investment they ever made. And so you're going to have this... You're going to have this, the pressure on the senators between their conscience, the facts, and on one side, and then on the other, the donors. And meanwhile, the claims for the bill. You know, Gary Cohn, the president's economic advisor, said, "Oh, the most excited group out there about this bill are big CEOs." Well, that was an in politic thing to say a couple of weeks ago. It turned out it was also wrong. He had a meeting with some Wall Street people this week, and someone said, how many of you are going to increase investment because of this tax cut and hire more people? And very few hands went up. And Cohn said, how come more hands aren't coming up? Well, the reason is that the companies aren't going to be making these kind of investments. They're going to be buying back stock. They're going to be increasing pay for executives. And the promised $4,000, you know, windfall that all of us were going to get in our salaries, that's going to be far to seek.
George in Waycross, Georgia. George, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you see?
Well, it's just, don't you think it's just incredibly irresponsible? I mean, all this president has done since he's been there is a lie, has been to lie, and unfortunately, it's taken us this long to determine that that's what to call it. And I don't know, Ryan must have been drinking the Kool-Aid for a long time. I don't know how he says this is a middle-class tax cut.
George, we got it. And let me get one more right here. Thank you, George. Mike in Natick, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Listen, this is a war on basically the poor, the working poor, people who take deductions for medical expenses, just all across the board at the benefit of the wealthy, whose coffers are already overflowing with money. They are dredging out a trickle-down economics which has never worked. They're so hell-bent on getting a win that they're willing to overlook the people that are hurting the most just so they can stay in power, eat those steaks they cut into every night, live up on the big shiny hill. It's a war. And I'll tell you what, the press needs to do a better job at explaining this bill. They need to go through it with a fine-tuned comb and make it digestible for people to understand.
Mike, we've done it. We've done it again and again, and we'll do more of it. But I appreciate your call. I really do. And let me get one more right here. Mark in New York City. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. So I'm a graduate student. I'm a PhD candidate, a cancer researcher. And my taxes are about to go up about 300% or 400%
if this
bill passes.
Goes through. Yeah,
that's right. And although there's been a lot of coverage in the press, I've seen a lot of newspaper articles about it. I haven't heard any reporters ask Paul Ryan or any of the GOP how they explain that. Like, how can they cut taxes for corporations while a graduate student like me would have to pay more taxes.
Yeah, they're going after deductions on a whole lot of fronts, including, yes, on the academic front. Margaret Brennan, how's the White House feeling about this? Do they see this going through? I mean, I saw NBC did an assessment. They said it would save the president $20 million. It would save his family, his kids, a billion plus with the estate tax here. Does the White House think this is going through?
Well, the White House just this morning says they expect to have a tax bill through by the new year. And so they need this badly in terms of a political win. The president loves pointing to stock market gains as a reflection of his positive influence on the country. A lot of the stock market gains are in part because these tax cuts have been baked in. Investors have been expecting this to happen. You can legislate taxes in a way that saves companies money. You can't legislate how they spend that money, which is where the disconnect is here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, photographers swarmed when three UCLA basketball players accused of shoplifting in China arrived back in the U.S., one shouting, "How much was bail?" Player Cody Riley apologized at a press conference Wednesday.
How much was bail in China, guys?
I take full responsibility for the mistake I have made, shoplifting. I know that this goes beyond me letting my school down, but I let the entire country down.
An anonymous Russian billionaire successfully built on a portrait of Christ, Salvator Mundi, by Leonardo da Vinci, the last painting of the master known to be in private hands. Final price, a record-smashing $400 million. $450 million when you include the fees.
Leonardo Salvator Mundi selling here at Christie's. $400 million is the bid, and the piece is sold.
That is real money. And the White House lifted a ban on hunters bringing African elephant trophies back to the U.S. Biologist Shane Wolf responded.
Elephants are in dangerous decline, and it's outrageous that the Trump administration is greenlighting trophy hunters to go into Zimbabwe and kill elephants.
A little elephant trumpeting there. We're looking at a week in the news, the sexual harassment revelations. The House votes through that tax plan. Trump defending Putin in Vietnam and beyond. Sessions testifies Zimbabwe's palace coup. Margaret Brennan is with us from CBS News. Aaron Blake from The Washington Post. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. What did the president really bring home from Asia? Are we getting the whole story from Jeff Sessions, from Donald Trump Jr., from Jared Kushner on the Russia front? Do you want hearings on the uranium deal? And this week, another gun rampage in California. What do we do? Thank goodness they didn't get into the school this time. The president got back after that long 12-day Asia trip, longest a president's taken abroad in a long, long time. Televised address Wednesday to promote his accomplishments, said he met his three goals, uniting the world against North Korea, strengthening American alliances, insisting on fair, free trade.
Over the last 2 weeks, we have made historic strides in reasserting American leadership, restoring American security, and reawakening American confidence.
Margaret Brennan, you're just back from that trip, maybe still a little bit of jet lag. Is the president fair in his description of his accomplishments there?
He's describing his impression of what he accomplished, but there were not many deliverables to bring home that would back up what he laid out there. But what you hear from the president and those around him is that they are confident that the president brought a message that was heard and received clearly in Asia, that America is back, and that anything that the U.S. is asked to do trade-wise to bring in products will then be reciprocated when America tries to sell products into their markets. However, there were no clear deliverables on that, nothing that clearly changed. A lot of the business deals that were touted by the president, the $300 billion, those were things that were already either in process or these are potential deals, not actual sales yet. They may well materialize. But a lot of this was the president going country to country and trying to build what he sees as important here, and that is the relationship level. Whether it was China, Xi Jinping, who he said he had very warm feelings for, doesn't blame any longer for the trade imbalance and said he greatly admires him in terms of his help so far on North Korea. He also praised the president of the Philippines as well, really touting his relationship as being so much better than the past president, which was shocking given the absence of comment on human rights abuses there in that country. The president really seemed to be focusing on relationship building, but not really messaging the things we typically hear from the President of the United States, which is exactly what a policy is, exactly whether America is going to take leadership. You didn't hear a lot of American leadership here. You heard some suggestion that America could perhaps help moderate or mediate disputes in the South China Sea, like the president offered, but nothing that said we're taking a hard stand here in defense of democratic values like human rights, whether it was in the Philippines, whether it was in China, whether it was Vietnam. There was a lot of silence on that, and also notably made no public comment about the ongoing attacks in Burma, which the UN has called a textbook case of ethnic cleansing. We didn't hear anything from America on that.
May I ask you on the trade front? Well, I mean, we talked with American business leaders in China this week, and they said they'd really seen nothing in terms of materially in terms of changing this relationship. Now, the president said while he was still in Asia, wait for Wednesday, midweek of this week, and you'll see big things to announce. Wednesday came, and as far as I could tell, it was zippo. I mean, he said that's when we'll make the big announcement about the big policy changes. And I didn't hear a thing. Is there anything material that's really changed in fundamental? Have they rolled out a new strategy, a U.S.?
No, one of the things that was changed but not touted by the president was China opening up some, removing some of the restrictions from its financial and banking sector, something that the White House didn't ask for, but something that they got. And so I don't know that you can call that a win, but from the Trump administration's point of view, they believe their messaging that a new sheriff is in town is enough to change Chinese leadership's mind here.
Oh, still, you have to have a plan. You have to have something to follow. And what about a North Korea? Is there any sign that there have been deals made or understandings reached in preparation for action? Or, I mean, people worry about war here. Anything
right
there?
Right. No new language from China on that. Xi Jinping has often said, well, you know, we don't really want a nuclear armed North Korea. That wasn't new. But what to be fair to the administration, it may take time to really gauge what is exactly happening on that border between China and North Korea in terms of the black market. Are they truly enforcing the sanctions that they signed up to at the United Nations? Are they stopping the import of goods from North Korea that, you know, some merchants are still carrying out? We've had reporters on the border saying they're still seeing items being sold. And so over the next 3 months, that's something to watch. And that's why we need reporters on the ground actually helping to judge whether those sanctions are being enforced. So it may take some time to say whether or not the president's trip and his relationship building with Xi Jinping made a difference.
What about his relationship with Vladimir Putin? What about with Putin? And he came out and said, well, Putin told me again that he didn't interfere in America's elections, and I believe he's sincere in that. Why is the president saying, I mean, who does he expect Vladimir Putin to say, yes, we interfered in your elections?
Well, what we heard from the White House and from the president himself, who tried to sort of walk back those remarks because they were, you know, they landed like a bomb in the press, was the president trying to say basically he takes Vladimir Putin as attempting to be sincere when he says it, but that he ultimately does believe his own intelligence community. He was trying to draw some distinction there, saying, you know, while I do believe the intelligence community career professionals who ran the agencies under Obama were hacks, I believe my guys who've reaffirmed those very same assessments that said, you know, this interference did happen and that Russia was ultimately behind it. So that was some spin after the fact, but what you're hearing from the administration is just how much they really want to turn the page from this hyper-focus in terms of the ongoing Russia probe. And they tried to celebrate some kind of breakthrough, they said, between the U.S. and Russia on Syria to agree to, in the future, allow for a political transition, potentially even have refugees vote in an election to replace Assad. And yet then, days later, Russia contradicted that, and yesterday at the United Nations, the UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, contradicted that, saying Russia can't be trusted. So far, we haven't seen this warm relationship that the president has tried to develop with Vladimir Putin result in any kind of actual change.
I want to bring that all home to the testimony before the House Judiciary Committee on Tuesday, and we had Attorney General Jeff Sessions back there yet again testifying, saying his memory just had some holes in it there, did not remember a meeting with former Trump campaign aide George Papadopoulos until he said he didn't remember it until seeing news reports a few weeks ago. Here he was.
I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago. and I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it.
Aaron Blake, take us to Sessions' testimony this week. Why was he called back? What did people want to clarify? And you know, did Congress get answers here? What do we know on the Russia investigation at this point?
Well, this was one of kind of regularly held oversight hearings that Congress holds with the Attorney General. We've seen them recently in the Senate. This one was the House, so there were a lot more members peppering him with questions. It was interesting to see him, not recall the meeting with George Papadopoulos and then recall it later and say that he had said the trip was a bad idea.
That is, Papadopoulos just, was going to Russia. I wanted to say, should I set up a meeting with Putin?
Right.
We've got photos of this with Donald Trump and Sessions and Papadopoulos all right there at the table.
Why this is problematic for Sessions is that this is just the latest example of him amending past statements, changing the way he describes events, not remembering things that are convenient for him. It's really striking, especially from a lawyer who is the head lawyer of the United States, to seem to be pretty careless with the way he described his interactions and knowledge of interactions with Russians during the 2016 campaign. I don't know that any of it's necessarily damning at this point, but the totality of it suggests that he didn't really have a good handle on how seriously he should be taking these questions. He didn't really have his story straight from the very beginning.
Jack Beattie, how do you see the Russia front mounting up at this point? Or is it? I mean, there's news of another, dozen subpoenas from Mueller toward members of Donald Trump's campaign. Is this going somewhere or not, Jack?
It's going somewhere with increased momentum, according to the Washington Post this week. And I think the facts are slightly different since then. But there were 19 known meetings and 31 interactions with Russians during that campaign by the Trump campaign and administration. That's a lot of contacts. And that combined with the president's sinister bromance with Vladimir Putin, his inability to simply say flat out, really, what Dick Cheney said, and Dick Cheney was clear, that what Russia did was an act of war. The president can't even go close to that, and you just have to ask, what does Russia have on him? Is that what's making him essentially paralyzing his ability to speak, to defend the American national.
But Jack, he says we want closer relations with Russia, and this is a witch hunt. This is a load of hooey.
Well, what do we have? 19 meetings and 31 interactions. That doesn't sound like hooey.
John in Clarksville, Tennessee. John, you're on the air. Hello, John. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's funny that to me that Kushner and Sessions and a lot of those other people that were supposed to be close to him or in his committees just randomly misinform everybody about their emails or conversations about Russia throughout the whole campaign, which ended up being a big thing during the time that these things happened. So it's just really odd that nobody can remember, but Trump always says, I have a great memory, but when it comes to something, I don't remember that conversation. He was in the meeting with George Papadopoulos.
Yeah, pretty patchy memories where it comes to this front, John, and I appreciate your call. Jimmy in Oklahoma City. Jimmy, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm trying to switch. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Jimmy. What do you say?
Okay, fantastic. I just want to say, for everybody that elected Donald Trump and all of his promises, I think Putin's got photos of him with the hookers. That's why he refuses to say anything, and I'll take it off the air.
Well, I mean, this is the dossier people talk about that got started with Republican interest and then was financed by Democrats after a while. The whole conversation about that came up this week as well. You know, should there be a special counsel looking into that, looking into the whole uranium business? Here was Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Jordan. He had pressed Jeff Sessions also this week on what it would take to appoint a special counsel, saying it looked like the Clinton campaign and had paid the company behind this dossier. Here was Jeff Sessions.
And I would say looks like is not enough basis to appoint a special counsel.
Aaron Blake, on the uranium front or the dossier front, is there a special counsel coming to look at Hillary Clinton?
Well, to hear those comments from the attorney general, it sure doesn't sound like it. There was a letter that Sessions put out or that was obtained, rather, in which he did discuss the possibility of a special counsel to look into Clinton's, to look into the dossier, all of these things that Congressman Jordan laid out in his question to Sessions. And I think some people saw that as the possibility that this would come to be a real thing, that this would actually happen. I think it was more of a reaction to the calls from Jordan and other House Republicans for this special counsel. I think it was more skeptical than people realized it was. And that response from Attorney General Sessions to Jim Jordan, I thought was pretty strong. And it was really a rebuke in a lot of ways of some conspiracy theories that the president himself has pointed to when it comes to the dossier and to the Clintons.
And this week, another assault-style rifle out and killing, this time in Northern California, a shooting rampage there. At least five people, including the shooter's wife, killed. He tried but failed to get into the Rancho Tehama Elementary School there. Tehama County Assistant Sheriff Phil Johnston praised the school's teachers and staff for quickly locking the building down after hearing the gunshots.
It is monumental that school went on lockdown. I really, truly believe that we would have had a horrific bloodbath in that school if that school hadn't taken the action when they did. So I can't say how important that is.
Living so close to that line, and week after week we see these lately, it is utterly horrifying. A little movement, Aaron, this week on background checks, some bipartisan movements there on Capitol Hill. What's happening? Is it significant?
We'll have to wait and see. There's always momentum for these things immediately after they happen. That momentum tends to dissipate after a while. We may remember after Las Vegas, there was real consensus on bump stocks, the things that turn semi-automatic weapons into automatic weapons, essentially. And we still haven't seen a bill passed all these weeks later. So we'll see what happens. But I think that it's always good to be skeptical that they're going to move on this stuff.
Margaret Brennan, welcome home from Asia. Did you feel the U.S., the world's respect for the United States growing to epic heights there, as the president suggests?
Well, I think the respect has been there. Whether anything actually changed is the question. And I didn't see anything that showed a monumental change that has been trumpeted by the president.
We will watch for the facts as everything rolls forward on all kinds of fronts. What a time. Margaret Brennan with CBS News, White House and senior foreign affairs correspondent there, just back from Asia. Margaret, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Get some rest over this weekend. And Aaron Blake, senior political reporter for The Washington Post, thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beattie, thanks as always, sir.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.